Good morning. Before I jump in this morning, I want to remind you that this message is going to be a little PG-13 this morning, okay? I promise you that I won't take you anywhere where the text does not lead me, but we've titled the sermon The Temptation of Beauty or something like that, but a better title may be Wisdom for Sex and Sexuality. That's where we're going today, okay? So prepare yourselves. All right, hang with me. Somehow I ended up preaching both the money and the sex sermons in this series, but I don't know how that happened, but we're doing it, all right? So this is our last sermon, actually, in this series on Proverbs, where we've been looking at wisdom, and we've been going through Proverbs thematically. You know, rather than going verse by verse, we're looking at the big themes unpacked in the book of Proverbs. And I'll say that we're only about halfway through what we think are the big themes that Proverbs covers. And so we've even talked maybe about picking this series up at another point and unpacking more of those themes, but we'll see about that. Maybe next summer or something. I know I've really enjoyed digging into Proverbs, and I hope you guys have too. So we have this kind of working definition for wisdom for every week. Wisdom. Wisdom is the ability to be competent in the complexities of life. Competent in the complexities of life. The majority of the decisions that we face in life, we cannot find an answer to by simply either gathering more information or looking strictly at a moral code, right? Doesn't most of life, most of life's decisions and issues are in this gray area? And what we're saying is that wisdom is the thing that deals, that helps us to deal with all of those gray areas of life. And we need this wisdom, too, for our romantic relationships, for sex, and for the way that beauty affects all of us. Is there any area of life where there is more information, but such little wisdom? You know, just in my lifetime, there has been an explosion of information about sex. Kids, I think, are taught more, like more detail at younger ages than I was when I was a kid. Scientists are hard at work. They're coming out with study after study after study about sex and sexuality, and I am not at all saying that the gathering of that information is bad. What I'm asking is this: has that massive influx of information corresponded with widespread cultural wisdom about sex? Certainly not. Certainly not. We need a good dose of wisdom in this area of life. Information is not answering all of our problems and questions, but neither are rules or morals. You know, most people in our culture, and I would say to some degree, if we're really honest with ourselves, many of us have decided that it's a free-for-all in terms of sex. Many people think it's just unrealistic that two people would be abstinent before getting married. After marriage, they say, well, it's just unnatural for two people to stay sexually faithful to one another for decade after decade after decade of marriage. The especially moral might say, okay, well, I will be faithful, but out of my kind of gritted teeth, like out of my duty to my spouse, I will do it, but I don't think it's quite right. If we're honest with ourselves, we all need wisdom in this area of sex and sexuality. You know, we all see like the sex wisdom posted on the front of magazines at the grocery store, don't we? But are they connecting in helpful ways for our society? You know, 30% of men will have an extramarital affair. 30%. There are startling statistics about STDs in America. Something like 110 million people. Two out of every three college students say they have a friends with benefits relationship, communicating just absolute casual sex. And as if all that weren't enough, about 80% of people say that they are dissatisfied with their sex lives. I take that statistic to mean like a self-identification of like, hey, look, this is not working for me. The values, the wisdom that I've been employing is not, it's not working. I need help. I know that this isn't working. I need wisdom. Well, what if God has woven into the fabric of creation wisdom, something that will help us not to just survive the questions and problems that sex raises, but wisdom that will help us thrive in our romantic relationships? To ignore that fabric, to ignore that wisdom, is like swimming upstream, encountering lots of resistance and difficulty in these very important issues. I think that Proverbs teaches us that there is that fabric in creation, and when we find it, we are blessed. So this morning, we're going to look at the power of sexuality in the book of Proverbs. We're going to talk about three things. Number one, how we undervalue sex. How we undervalue sex. Number two, how we somehow simultaneously overvalue sex, don't we? We undervalue it and we overvalue it. Those are the first two. And thirdly, we'll talk about the solution to those things. So we're going to look a lot at this passage from Proverbs. And so I invite you to pull this little sheet out and just jump around with me as I work through this passage from Proverbs. As you're pulling that out, I will remind you that we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Proverbs is written primarily to young men. So there is a gender bias in this text, all right? But women, do not let that throw you. It was just written to a specific audience. It was written for, like, young boys' schools, okay? And so don't let it throw you. It might say your wife, but it applies both directions, okay? So this passage is describing what the relationship should be like between a husband and a wife. And it paints a picture with language that is almost too hot to handle. If you think Song of Songs is explicit, hold on. We're going to start in verse 15. Verse 15 says this: drink water from your own cistern or well. Seems innocent enough. However, in Hebrew poetry, this image of a cistern or a well is an image for female sexuality. It's something that you have to enter into in order to get the water. Okay? Verse 18, may your fountain be blessed. May your fountain be blessed. Now, this isn't water that you need to go in to get. This is water that flows out. This is an image for male sexuality. Is everyone blushing yet? You know, Beth was nervous enough to say the word breasts in church. She had no idea what she was really reading. If she really knew what she was reading this morning, I'm pretty sure she would not have agreed to do this. Thank you, Beth. And then we come to verse 19. May your wife's breasts satisfy your desires, and may you ever be intoxicated by her love. Captivated. That word there literally means staggering drunk with love for your spouse. That's right. Beyonce did not invent the term drunk in love, all right? She took it from Proverbs. This is what marriage should look like. Two people crazy in love, drunk in love with one another. And then verse 16, should your springs flow in the streets? No, of course not. Of course not. What that's saying is that casual sex is out. Casual sex is out. You don't just put it out there. What Proverbs is communicating here is an incredibly high view of sex and sexuality. And we undervalue it. It's way up here. It's a beautiful thing. There is just no prudishness here at all, right? It's celebratory. Sex should be enjoyed and celebrated. We should rejoice in sexual pleasure. Look, I know that some of you are uncomfortable. Some of you haven't made eye contact with me for like the last 5 minutes. But suffice it to say that I am holding back here, actually, okay? If I gave you all the details of this text, it would be much worse. Just trust me on that, okay? I'm holding back. There's more I could say, but the point is this, that this is a very high view of sex and marriage. Let's look down below the last little section from chapter 30, another poem. It says, there are three things that are too amazing for me, four that I don't understand. The way of an eagle in the sky, the way of a snake on a rock, the way of a ship on the high seas, and the way of a young man with a young woman. This is a poem about wonder, about beauty, about amazement. Four things that are too amazing for me. And again, these are erotic, poetic images. You know, an eagle entering the air, a ship on the high seas, two things coming together. So when it says, like, the way of a young man with a young woman, it's not talking about, like, the way that they joke with one another, okay? Do you get this? This is a very explicit poem. And what the Proverbs, the writer of Proverbs, is saying is that these three things are great, the snake and the eagle and the ship, but most wonderful of them all is sex between a man and wife. And then you come to the last verse, verse 20, which just seems like a stark, like, shift, doesn't it? Just a total shift. It says this. This is the way of an adulterous woman. She eats and wipes her mouth and says, I've done nothing wrong. This poem communicates, or this last verse here, communicates sex as sloppy eating. It's a contrast in both image and attitude. You know, so for me, it communicates two things. The way that this person views sex is, first of all, just kind of gross, isn't it? You know, you picture just someone just sloppily eating and wiping their mouth with their sleeve. It's just gross. But secondly, in communicating or in connecting sex to this image of food, I think it's painting sex as kind of routine, right? It's just an appetite. It's just a regular recurring appetite that I need to satisfy. What's the big deal? It's just sloppy eating. It's just consumption. And the Bible is saying that is too low. That is too low. That is undervaluing sex. What that passage communicates is what sociologists now would refer to as commodification. You familiar with this term? Commodification is the process by which social relations are reduced to economic exchange relations. It's taking something beautiful and turning it into a consumer relationship. And we all know that in a consumer relationship, one only stays in the relationship as long as it makes economic sense. Amen. As long as you are meeting my needs. But as soon as you stop, I'm out. I'm done. I'm out of here. The relationship should be an end in it of itself. You should stay in it whether it's meeting your needs or not. And these days, our relationships are trending more towards commodification. They are consumer-based, not commitment-based. In our relationships, it's the products that matter, not the person. This is affecting certainly many of our sexual relationships as well, what we could call the commodification of sex in our society. And what the Bible teaches is that you should never try to extract sex from the whole person. You should never give them your body without giving them your whole self. And you should never receive someone's body without receiving their whole self. What the Bible is communicating here is that sex belongs in marriage. It belongs in marriage. If you are having sex but you're not married, you aren't sharing all of yourself. You are holding something back from them. You haven't given all of yourself and you haven't received all of the other person. Is sex an exchange of products or is it an exchange of selves? Sex is supposed to be a radical self-donation. Sex goes in marriage. And to you married folks, I'll say this. There's a word for you too. We should be striving in our sexual relationships with your spouse to share your whole self, not simply treat it as a routine, like a product exchanged on a regular basis. It's the radical self-donation, sharing of selves. You know, one area where we see this like kind of undervaluing of sex played out so clearly right now is in the prevalence of pornography in our culture, right? If you think about it, pornography is an undervaluing of sex. It's an undervaluing of sex. It treats sex like a commodity. It detaches or extracts it from an actual person. You know, we all know that intimacy is complicated. Sharing your true self is both dangerous and difficult. But pornography is cheap and false intimacy. It's a commodity. And even our secular culture recognizes that pornography is damaging. It's the opposite of wisdom. But if you treat sex as an amazing sharing of selves, if you use it like that, you will be soaring like an eagle in the sky. And if you don't, you will treat it like a commodity, like groceries. It will become boring and routine. We undervalue sex by turning it into a product. At the same time that we undervalue it, we also overvalue it, don't we? In the sense that, like, sex is everywhere, right? Physical beauty is everywhere. We see it, and they use it to sell everything. And if you kind of took TV at its face value, you would wind up with a very unrealistic and kind of twisted expectation or version or view of sex, right? Specifically, I think we really overvalue sexual attractiveness and physical beauty, okay? And for that, we'll look at this verse 22 here, 11:22. Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman who shows no discretion. Now, are there any women out there whose feathers ruffled a little bit when you heard that verse? It's a tough one, but here's the image. Here's the illustration. Someone who reaches for a beautiful ring, they can't help themselves. They reach out and grab it, and they pull that beautiful ring towards themselves. But then they realize that what they have pulled towards themselves is a pig, an animal that rolls in its own mud and feces, an animal that eats slop. You reached out for beauty, but you are stuck with a huge mess. In the same way, if you pull a person toward yourself based on their physical attractiveness, if you pull that kind of strikingly beautiful person towards yourself, but haven't realized that they are a person of no character, a person who is selfish, a person who is foolish, a person who is shallow, then you are just as foolish as the guy who pulls that ring from the snout's nose. Beauty is not found on the outside. It's found on the inside. And if you grab that physically attractive person and pull it towards yourself without seeing, without examining what is attached to the physical beauty, then you are a fool. This verse, that verse 22 there, is a slam on men. It's a real harsh critique, and I would say a fair one on men. Let me talk to the men for a second. This passage is illustrating very bluntly the way that we habitually evaluate women based on their looks. And this passage says that to do so is destructively foolish. It's destructively foolish to evaluate someone based on their physical appearance. Men, can you own that you do that? If not, it's hard to see it in yourself sometimes. I'd give you this challenge. This week, look for it in other men. Watch the way that other men interact with, like, physically beautiful people. You'll see it. It won't take you long to see how true this is, how we really treat people differently based on their physical attractiveness. It's destructive, and it causes a rift between the sexes. Well, let me speak now to the women for a second, and I'll do so by using verse 16 of chapter 11 here. A kind-hearted woman gains honor, but ruthless men gain only wealth. Now, the translation here is not doing me any favors. That phrase, a kind-hearted woman, they're kind of softening it. What that the most accurate translation would probably be, an objectively beautiful woman gains honor. Gains honor. Now, this is referring to the way that women use their beauty as a means to gain prestige and significance. Men use power. Women use beauty. Women use looks to get prestige and significance. They look to their appearance for their own self-regard. It's all about how they look. Psychologists would say that we as human beings need one of two things. We need either to be beautiful ourselves, to be beautiful, to kind of convince ourselves and others that we are really something, that our insides aren't as broken and dying as they actually are. We either need to be beautiful or we need to merge ourselves, connect ourselves with someone that is. I'll be with her. She's really something, and that will compensate for the ugliness in here. So we both undervalue the real meaning and beauty of sex. We undervalue it, and we overvalue physical attractiveness. And this is serious. It's creating real problems in our culture. How can we break the power of sex and beauty in our lives? How can we have real wisdom in regards to these complicated issues? Well, remember that little poem at the very end of our reading? You know, the poem about the three things, no, the four things that are too beautiful. In that, what the writer of that is saying, is communicating, is, you know, you don't understand, you can't understand sexuality unless you understand the glories of creation. It compares it to the glories of creation. Well, in Ephesians 5, Paul one-ups the sage, the writer of Proverbs. He says, no, you don't understand, you can't understand the beauty of sexuality without understanding the glories of redemption, the glories of the cross. I don't have this passage for you, but just listen along. This is from Ephesians 5:25. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. He starts with husbands and wives, but how quick is he to go straight to the cross as a parallel for that relationship? As Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her with the washing of water and with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor or in beauty, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. What Paul is saying is that you will never understand and have the power to live wisely unless you see that God is your lover. God made us not just to be his sheep, but to be his love. He wants us to be drunk in love with him. He wants us to be crazy about him. He wants us to be obsessed with him, where we cannot stop thinking about him. He wants us to love our Creator the way that we love our lovers. But we put that love on other things. And like the greatest love story, like even the most romantic love story that's ever been told, he came back. Jesus came back to win our fickle hearts. And when he did, Isaiah says that he had no beauty that we would desire him. Jesus had no fame, no prestige, no significance, no physical attractiveness that we would be drawn to him, except this. Except that he was the only real, true, pure beauty that this world has ever seen. Not an outward shell beauty, but a deep, inner, perfect beauty. And the degree that we can grasp that is the degree that which we can live with real wisdom in regards to sex and beauty. Jesus came to show us real beauty. He came not because you and I were beautiful, but he came to make us beautiful. And he has the only kind of beauty that will transform our lives if we really merge with it. So we need not undervalue sex. It's to be celebrated between husband and wife, two people drunk in love with one another. And this points to the passion that Christ has for us. But we need not overvalue it either. While outward beauty are fleeting and even deceiving, true beauty is found only in Christ. So merge with him. Let's pray.